Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is writer Ann Mazur. Mazur has written more than 40 books for young readers, including the picture book The Salamander Room and two best-selling series, The Amazing Days of Abby Hayes and Sister Magic, both published by Scholastic. Mazur also recently published a delightful nonfiction book called Spilling Ink, A Young Writer's Handbook. It was co-written with the award-winning children's book author Ellen Potter. Spilling Ink was published by Roaring Book Press. And welcome to the show, Ann.
Thank you, Tish. I'm very happy to be here.
Now you grew up in a family of writers, and I heard that early on you wanted to be an artist. So tell us about that and how you evolved into a writer from there.
Well, I don't think I really thought of being an artist until I was in my teens. I think of myself as having grown up in a nonstop 24-hour, 7-day-a-week writer's boot camp. And pretty much my parents were obsessed with writing. It was writing for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and I thought it was the world's most boring thing.
Really?
They were talking about plot, characterization, description, and, you know, tossing around these big writing words all the time. And I just thought this was the driest thing imaginable. And it didn't seem to me that writers had a very glamorous life. From what I could see from my parents, they would lock themselves in their room with some typewriters and blank sheets of paper and stay there for hours. And then they would emerge. And I just thought, no, this is not for me. The strange thing was, and it never occurred to me how ironic this was, but my refuge from their writing was in reading. And I became a voracious reader. But it was so second nature to me that I never even thought of myself as a writer. And I loved visual arts. And when I was 14, I kind of toyed with being an artist. I went to art school for a year. And then I realized I had kind of an epiphany at the end of the year. And I thought, I'm not willing to put the work into this. It just became very clear that I didn't enjoy it.
Huh.
And that's when I abandoned it.
That's interesting that you turned to writing, which is also, to me, it sounds like a really hard art to pursue as well. So I understand that you went to Paris and began studying French and French literature, perhaps, and you started writing at that point.
Mostly I was writing letters. I like to say I began writing because I was writing obsessively, but I didn't think of myself as a writer. I just was communicating with the important people in my life through letters. I didn't make a lot of phone calls. There were no cell phones. And it was rather difficult to make transatlantic phone calls at that point. I just naturally began writing long letters. And I would spend hours in cafes sitting there with these very thin, translucent sheets of blue paper.
Aerograms.
The aerograms.
Yes.
They were so magical. And writing in the tiniest script possible so that people could read my thoughts or my
See, I've always thought that travel was a good way to learn how to write description. Could have been a precursor to being able to write fiction for kids.
I never thought of it that way. I always think of it as having really changed my view of myself and of my place in the world. I left America and feeling very disillusioned with my life. It was the 60s. And I came back and I was really glad to be an American, actually. I worked as an au pair in a sort of upper middle class French family. And the class system was very strong there, especially the Parisian upper class at that time. And I was treated like a servant, and it was an experience that I've never forgotten and that made a deep impression on me. And I kept thinking an American family would not have treated me that way.
Really? Huh,
because I was a student, and the American families assumed if you were a student and, you know, they didn't treat you like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I was kind of shocked. But in a good way, I think.
Well, I'm sure you've been able to use it as a writer. So tell us the evolution of the writing career, because you began writing children's books, which I find very interesting. Why children's books?
I love them, basically. And I want to get back to something I said before, that I wasn't willing to do the work of being an artist.
Mm-hmm.
But I did have kind of an aha moment about being a writer. And when I came back to New York after being in Paris for 3 years, I worked at a variety of secretarial and administrative jobs. And I was pretty terrible at them. One of my friends said, "You're a misfit in an office." And that pretty much described it. But one of my bosses had asked me to prepare a report on air conditioners. And so I had prepared this long report about which was the best air conditioner to use for his apartment building. And I found myself just making sure that the writing flowed. I was like polishing every sentence. I was polishing the paragraphs. I was making sure they read beautifully. And as I was writing it, I thought, this is ridiculous. Nobody cares but me. And suddenly I realized I was doing it because I had to and because I loved to make the words come out sounding right. And that was the moment I think I realized I was a writer.
Ah, what an interesting moment.
It was a strange moment. And then I started writing a young adult novel based on some of my experiences in Paris. That was rejected by 6 different editors.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it was. I got some very nice rejection letters, but they all said basically the same thing, that it had no plot, which was correct. I could write beautiful sentences, but I didn't know how to string them together in a story.
See, that's something that one does need to learn, which to me is the other side of the art thing. You do have to learn this art of writing.
You do. In a way, I don't think anyone can really teach you. People can open doors for you, but they can't really tell you how to write. I think people can guide other people and to help them get in touch with what's inside them, but it's really up to you as a writer to develop it, and that's very difficult work. In Spilling Ink, I call writing mental rock breaking, and I really think of it that way. It's very hard work.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. Well, before we talk about Spilling Ink, I do want to talk a little bit about your series, especially The Amazing Days of Abby Hayes. You've written over 20 books about Abby Hayes. To tell us where this character came from.
She's a 10-year-old girl who loves to write. She's a middle child in a family of overachievers, and she's the quiet one, and she's struggling to find her identity. She has some very high-achieving older sisters. She has a very high-achieving brother and parents, and throughout the series, she kind of struggles to find who she is.
Well, what age is it written for?
It's written for ages, I would say, 7 to 12.
I think she's an interesting character. I only read the first of the series to get to know Abby and find out who she was. It sounds like a really interesting character that you can develop different little stories about, and she's very accessible.
I loved Abby.
Mm-hmm.
I really loved Abby. When I started writing about her, my daughter was 10 years old, and so was Abby. And so I had this whole world of my daughters and my daughter's friends to get ideas from, really.
Uh-huh. Did you ever think about making Abby age?
Well, my daughter's now 21, and Abby is 11. And that kind of says it all.
She's stunted growth.
Yeah. A lot of kids have written to ask me about that, and I said my answer is usually that she lives in series time.
Ah, that's a good answer.
Because she can't age out of the target audience. Unfortunately, sometimes my editor and I had fun. We amused ourselves with thinking about Abby at older ages, what she would do and what the different characters would be like.
Uh-huh. Well, you take her on some interesting adventures. You also wrote a series called Sister Magic, which when I was a kid, I loved anything about magic and kids who could access magic. To tell us about Sister Magic.
Sister Magic was an idea that I had rolling around in my head for a really long time. Part of it was based on the relationship I had with my younger sister. Unlike Abby, I was the oldest child in a family of 4 kids, and I was definitely not the forgotten middle one. But in Sister Magic, there are 2 sisters. Mabel, the older one, is a bit of a control freak and likes to have things exactly right. And the younger one is kind of wild and does things her own way.
And her name is Violet.
And her name is Violet. And she seems to get away with things that Mabel wouldn't even think of doing. So Mabel has this fascination with her younger sister. On one hand, she wants to make her obey the rules. And on the other hand, I think she's deeply fascinated by her little sister's freedom, which was certainly the case with me. I felt that my little sister was able to do all sorts of things that I couldn't do. But I think I have a little bit of both characters in me. I'm not a strict Mabel. I do have that Violet in me.
Uh-huh. And Violet turns out to have some magic powers, right?
Yes, she does. And Mabel doesn't. I had a lot of fun writing that series.
Oh, yeah. What a great fantasy it is for kids to think that magic is around them, you know?
What I liked was the ordinariness of the family and the family dynamics and what happens to a sibling relationship when one sister has an unfair advantage, like having magic, and how that affects the dynamic of their relationship.
Uh-huh. Well, what kind of letters do you get from kids when they read these books?
Very excited because they recognize themselves in the books. I would say for both Abby Hayes and Sister Magic, the kids write and say, I have a little sister who is just like Violet. Or they write to me about their families, or I'm just like Abby. I love the color purple. I love to write. And Abby inspired me to start writing in a journal.
Ah, that's great. Kids do need role models. That's what's fun about writing kids' books, too. You can create little role models.
I love that. When I began to write, I was very opposed to writing books that had a lot of didactic messages mm-hmm. in them and a lot of morals. But I think that you can express a lot of really positive things and that things come through you as you write, that you don't have to sit there and dot all the I's and cross all the T's and say this is your lesson of the day, but you can really work things out in a book that can inspire kids to think about their own lives and how they might work things out.
Yeah, I mean, just like adults, kids do not want to be manipulated.
I hate that.
I think everybody does. And you can't teach somebody if you're manipulating them, as
no.
far as I can tell.
No, and I think they're smarter than that.
Uh-huh.
I think they recognize something false like that.
Yeah.
And I think when they read something true, it resonates with them and it makes them excited. It frees them up in some way.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. I know. There are a lot of people who don't think kids don't have moral compasses or can't detect BS, you know? That's wrong.
I totally disagree with that.
I totally disagree with that, too. Seems to me in childhood, though, a lot of people assume that. I remember feeling that a lot. I was being talked down to and, you know.
I think the first requirement of being a children's book writer is to respect your audience, to respect the kids and their intelligence and their understanding.
Yeah.
And who they are.
Yeah. I think those are great rules. Now, let's talk about your most recent venture in writing. It's called Spilling Ink, A Young Writer's Handbook. I thought it was great.
Thank you.
Tell us how this whole idea evolved.
Well, it's kind of an interesting story. I had always wanted to write a book about writing. And my first idea was to write it for adults, and I was going to call it Writer's Blocks, as in building blocks. And I had a thick stack of notes that sat in my closet for a number of years, and I never was able to do anything with them. I made all kinds of starts, but I never went anywhere. And then I met Ellen Potter, and we were both receiving a lot of letters from kids who said the same thing, which was basically, I love to write, I want to write, will you give me tips on how to be a writer?
If you're just joining us, my guest is Anne Mazur. She's a writer of children's books, and she recently published a nonfiction book called Spilling Ink, A Young Writer's Handbook. She co-wrote this with Ellen Potter, and this is what we're discussing at the moment. Tell us more about how this evolved. So you met Ellen Potter, and you decided to write a book together, I suppose.
I had always wanted to meet Ellen. And I finally met her through another Ithaca author, Megan Schull, who was originally in with us on the writing, but she unfortunately had to leave the project. So Ellen and I went on alone, and Megan had organized a big evening at the Hangar Theater, you might have heard of it, called You Read Girl, and it was to inspire girls to read and to be excited about reading. And she had asked Ellen and myself to participate, and that's where I met them. And it was such a great evening that I thought I really want to extend this partnership with these women, these amazing women. And so I said, what about you write, girl? And so we all got together, and the first thing we said was, got to be for boys as well as girls, can't just be for girls.
Uh-huh.
The reading event was a smaller event, and it was for girls, but we wanted something broader. And then eventually Megan had to leave, so Ellen and I went on alone. And our partnership was kind of like the dream team. We were perfectly complementary. I'm not quite sure how this worked out, because the things that she wanted to do were not the things that I wanted to do. And the things that I was really excited about, I was excited about the writer's brain, thinking about being a writer, the writer's habits, ideas, writer's block, the very psychological aspects of being a writer.
Mm-hmm.
And I think my upbringing contributed to that, growing up in a family of writers and having thought about it a lot. And Ellen was just brilliant on craft. And since I had never really studied writing systematically, that stuff made me very nervous. And she just explained things so wonderfully. And so she took most of the craft sections. I took a few. And I took most of the writer's brain sections. She took a few. The book just grew organically. We would just get on the phone and we would say, we should write about this, and we should tell them what it's like to be a professional writer, and we should explain what metaphors are and what description is. And so we would just have all kinds of ideas.
Oh, it's great. The book is just great. I found it really fascinating. It explained some things to me that I hadn't thought about. And I was just wondering this. How does an adult remain in that kind of childlike state so that you're talking to these kids the way you do in this book? Because you aren't talking down to them, back to what we were talking about. You aren't being condescending, but you're very funny. You recognize that kids will get this humor.
This is my favorite question. Writing for kids, I think when you're an adult, you have to be seeing things through the eyes of a child, but aware of being an adult at the same time. So you're both people at once. I used to have this slogan, which was, you have to get creative to be creative. And I used it about finding time to write when I had small children and I had to figure out creative ways to get writing time. But I think it also applies to the way we wrote the book. We thought it would be horrible to have a book about creative writing that would be deadening, so that we felt that our strongest feeling was that if we wanted kids to really feel the joy of writing, to understand how natural and intuitive it could be, we had to make it so accessible, so fun, so immediately intuitive and hands-on.
Oh, I loved it. And you say, I dare you. You have these little sections, yeah, where you say, I dare you to think about the color yellow and explain what that, you know, what that means to you. And it's got some great exercises in it.
And we had so much fun thinking them up.
Uh-huh.
And
but that I dare you thing is it just the most perfect thing? I mean, I was thinking, oh, maybe I should do some of these.
Yes.
I love that part of it.
Adults have loved it just as much as kids.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Well, it's so comprehensive, and it isn't dry. Like, you know, you think about reading a handbook or a how-to book, and you think, oh, God, you know,
exactly,
I'm just going to strum through this thing and try to find a piece that I might like. The whole book is entertaining. It's wonderful.
And we had just as much fun writing it.
Well, you can tell.
Yeah,
it's quite obvious. Now, how did you physically do this? Did you finally email each other the parts and put it together that way?
Because
I was thinking you might at some points repeat things in different words. But I mean, how did you?
Well, our editor, there was a tiny bit of repetition, and our editor helped us take it out and also find other areas where we should add sections. And then as we were ending, we began to think of more sections that we wanted to do. We thought we had covered it comprehensively, but there are a few things we still have left to say. We emailed back and forth, and it was wonderful. I would email something, and Ellen would critique it. And I have to say, our critiques were wonderful because both of us adored each other's writing. So it was like, oh my gosh, I love this. Uh-huh. And here's how you can make it even more fantastic. So that was kind of the spirit of how things kind of bounced back and forth. When I knew Ellen was on the other end waiting for my piece, I wanted to make it as funny and as good as possible. And I think for her too. So we really inspired each other and helped each other reach new heights. I felt like working with her, I became a better writer.
Oh, that's a wonderful experience.
Yeah, I became more free, I think. And she said she felt she became more thoughtful. So we kind of balanced each other out, and we taught each other, and we inspired each other. And so we would just go back and forth, and then we put the book into order. I was very scared of that because organization is not one of my strong points. And I think we went to her house at one point, and we put it on this gigantic table, and we spread out all the sections. I printed them out. This was when she was still in Ithaca. And we just, this one goes here, this one goes here, this one goes here.
It's almost like a jigsaw puzzle.
Yeah, we fit it together like a puzzle. And that was basically the order, although we kept working with it.
Well, I want to talk a little bit about what you say in this book. Your advice is wrapped a lot around the fact, and you say you have to show up on the page or nothing will happen. So you're encouraging kids to just start writing. That's
yes,
how you do it.
Yes, that is how you do it. Because you don't get anywhere unless you do it. And if you have this dream, you need to do it. Uh-huh. And then you have to find out who you are by doing it. Uh-huh. I think that's the whole
I think a lot of people who won't write, who want to write, are afraid.
Yes.
Of what they'll find. Is that the step that you have to jump?
You do have to face yourself in a lot of ways. Uh-huh. And writing is very hard. And I remember when I started, I had all these visions of what the great books I was going to write. And writing, I find writing is very humbling. And by the end of any book, I'm pretty much on my knees thinking, just get me through this thing. And you don't do what you think you can do, but what you actually do has a solidity to it. Mm-hmm. Once you do it, once you achieve something, once you set yourself a goal and you achieve something, even if it doesn't quite measure up to your grand dreams of who you think you should be, the solidity of having actually done this is really much more valuable and much more nourishing to you as a person.
Uh-huh. I like the way you tell kids that they can do more than they ever think they can do. You just have to do it.
Yeah. I think that's good advice for all of us at any point.
Well, I found something else that you said. This is a culture of multitasking, and everybody's on cell phones and texting. And you say that your advice that wasting time, doing nothing, and even sleeping can be important writer's tools. I love telling kids that in this culture. Talk to us more about that. How important daydreaming is.
Well, I did a lot of it during my life, both as a kid and as an adult. And now in this last phase of my life, I've been more workaholic. But I find the times when I have to stop. For example, when my kids were small and I had to take them to Stewart Park and I had to just sit there and watch them, and my mind would relax and all sorts of ideas would flow in. And I think there's a balance between working and resting that's really important for creativity. And your unconscious mind can do a lot for you. You can push, you can discipline yourself, you can work, and those things are important. But you also have to rest, you have to sleep, you have to let go, you have to go and feed your life. And all those things will feed into your writing, and they can't exist without each other. But I think people forget that. I think they get very focused on the work aspect of things. Mm-hmm. And I learned a lot of my writing lessons sort of half asleep growing up in my family and sort of observing my parents, not being aware that I was observing them. So I'm particularly aware of how you can learn some really important things when you don't even think you are learning anything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think people are losing sight of that in this culture when they feel like they have to be busy, even if it's with nothing very important.
Yeah, there's a kind of frantic busyness that is very draining, and I think I go on the computer, I'm on the internet, I flip around on the pages, and you find yourself very frazzled, whereas if you take a walk or you go see a friend or you do something with your family and you come back to your writing and you're really able to focus, that refreshes you, that nourishes you, and that feeds your creativity.
Are you worried about this culture where we do hear often that kids are not learning how to write properly, creativity isn't valued? Do you worry about that as a creative person who also writes for kids?
I worry about two things. One is the standardization in schools and the pressure on teachers to teach to the tests, because that kills the teacher's creativity. That's what I hear from teachers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that's what seems terrible, because if you kill the teacher's creativity, it's very hard for them to bring it to the kids and to nourish it in the kids. And the other thing that really disturbs me is how kids have become a commodity to be marketed to. And I think that books, especially, I think children's book writers have a responsibility to their audience because they're speaking to children. And children are not the same as adults.
Mm.
And I feel like we should always be aware of that they're growing and that whatever we're writing is nourishing them. And I don't think that books should be written with the sole purpose of just finding a market and selling, selling, selling. I don't think it's wrong to be successful. But I think that there have to be other elements of a book.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when you read a book, you're really communicating with somebody's spirit on both ends.
Yeah, I would think that's true, too. And you have said that you approach series writing differently than standalone novels. In what ways?
Well, with series writing, you have a much better idea of what you're doing because you know your characters. you have a sense of where the story is supposed to go. You know the limitations.
And you're constantly having to keep this character alive, too. I'm sure it
right.
stays in your mind.
Right. Your character becomes real in a way. You find the character accompanying you during your day, and you're in the mall, and all of a sudden you see something that reminds you of your character, and you start talking about her like she's a real person. Like, oh, she would have loved this. That actually happened with my daughter. We used to talk. We used to go to the mall and find outfits and things for my characters. The writing is much easier, I think, although it's much more intense because you have to do it on a schedule. And so I had to give up my agonizing over each word to a certain extent. I had to push forward much more than I ever had. And I really learned to plot, which was very hard for me. I learned to plot from the series. But now I'm writing a standalone novel after 11 years of writing series. And let me tell you, it is hard. It has been such a struggle.
Really?
Yes. I'm right back to my old obsessing over every word pattern, which I thought the series had completely transformed me.
Can you tell us a little tiny bit about it?
It's about a girl who is being bullied, and she gets a chance to remake her life. Oh. And I've been writing it for quite a while. I think when I began writing it, I thought, well, I've been writing 3 books a year for 11 years. This is going to be a piece of cake. And it definitely hasn't been. It's been one of those humbling writing experiences that I was talking about.
It sounds like a perfect topic for now when we hear so much about bullying.
I didn't really write it to be topical, but it really is topical. I was writing it out of my own experience of having been bullied in 7th and 8th grade. Mm. It was something that I was so ashamed of at the time that I couldn't speak about it. And then I decided to write a book about it.
Oh, that's great.
But, you know, as often happens when you write, the whole subject matter gets transformed and you end up with something quite different. So it's not really autobiographical anymore, but I have really drawn on many of my feelings and experiences at that time.
And when might we expect that to come out?
I'm hoping to have it finished maybe in 2011.
Oh,
it's going
great.
To be published by Fywell and Friends.
Oh, that's great. Oh, what a wonderful thing. I'm so glad that you have continued writing through all these years. And I'm excited that you're going to write a standalone novel. I think that's absolutely exciting. Now, we only have a minute left or so. Can you give people some contact information so that they can get in touch with you?
Yes, I have a website at www.annmazerbooks.com. That's Ann with an E, M-A-Z-E-R. And Ellen and I have also started a website for Spilling Ink, which is spillinginkthebook.com. We have a lot of free downloads there. We have some I Dare Yous, which we made especially for the website. They're not in the book. We created some new content. And we have a creativity blog, which features other writers and artists talking about what it means to them to be creative. And Ellen's website as well is www.ellenpotter.com.
That's great. Well, I hope everybody get in touch with this woman. She has a lot to teach you. So, Ann Mazur, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Tish. It's really been a pleasure.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. If you'd like to make a tax-deductible donation in support of the Out of Bounds radio show, please contact our fiscal sponsor, the Arts of the Southern Finger Lakes, at earts.org. That's earts.org. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. We'll be back next week. I'm Tish Perlman.